versus Moore and Moore versus Madigan. Mr. Gura.
Good morning. May it please the court. Illinois' prohibition on the carrying of guns for self-defense is simply not compatible with the constitutional guarantee that people enjoy a right to bear arms for self-defense. We start with this court's instruction in Ezell, which held that the scope of the Second Amendment right is determined by textual and historical inquiry, not interest balancing, close quote. The Second Amendment does not, in the Supreme Court's words in McDonald, quote, require judges to assess the costs and benefits.
Well, when you say no balancing, does that mean there are no limits on the right to bear arms?
No, Your Honor. Of course there are going to be limits. But
that must be some sort of balancing of interests, isn't it?
No, Your Honor. First of all, the limits on the scope of any right are determined by text, tradition, and history. The text, first of all, tells us what the right is. For example, while there is a right of
text in the Second Amendment is quite ambiguous.
It might be believed to be ambiguous by some, but the Supreme Court has written a very lengthy opinion, two opinions actually, about it, and this Court is bound by those opinions.
I understand that.
Reasonable people may disagree, and of course all the justices have written...
But there is a great deal of balancing implicit in, for example, allowing guns to be withheld from lunatics and criminals and so on.
There are two approaches to discerning those limits, and actually courts are somewhat split on that question, which is not presented in this case. The first approach, Your Honor, to that question is to see whether or not lunatics and criminals were within the scope of
There's
the right.
There's nothing in 18th century history or in the text of the Second Amendment about lunatics, is there?
No, there's not. However, we do have the traditional understanding that
no,
goes
I'm
back.
I'm asking you about the 18th century history. I don't think there's anything about lunatics bearing arms in the 18th century.
Irresponsible people, drunkards, people who were disloyal were all disarmed under a variety of provisions dating back many centuries. There's a rich history of, and of course today courts try to analogize these.
Well, that sounds like a rich history of balancing. Which if people are dangerous, they're not allowed to have guns. Well, let me ask you, assuming that the Illinois law goes too far and is unconstitutional, if we wanted to, you know, provide some advice to Illinois as to what it could do, what would you suggest?
Well, I don't believe the court should be.
The Constitution requires that there be no greater restrictions on carrying guns in public than having a gun in your house. Is that your view?
There should be, well, whichever restrictions.
Is that your view, yes or no?
Maybe what? There should be no restrictions outside the home, Your Honor?
No. That there can be no greater restrictions on carrying a gun in public, outside the home, than on having a gun in the home.
No, that is not our view, Your Honor. The court has held.
What kind of step? All right, go ahead.
Well, if we read Heller's language, it speaks a lot to language of time, place, and manner. The same sorts of restrictions that apply to other rights exercised outside the home. So, obviously, when a person moves a firearm.
Is that an 18th century concept? Time, place, and manner?
Actually, yes, Your Honor, there are historical roots for that. There were restrictions about the purposes to which people carried arms. There were definitely restrictions on the manner in which people carried arms, and those are well discussed by all the parties. For example, it's been always understood in our law that the state can regulate the manner in which arms are carried.
What does that mean?
Well, that means that so long as people have the right to exercise the right to carry an arm for self-defense, the state can regulate or restrict particular manners of doing so that are thought to be...
Like what?
Traditionally, concealed carry prohibitions have been approved, and in modern days...
Is that an 18th century concept?
It's a concept that goes back.
Is that
back.
An 18th century concept? Were there restrictions in the 18th century on carrying guns in public? If you had a musket in your house, which you were certainly allowed to have, were you maybe not permitted to carry it? What kind of restrictions were there on carrying your gun outside the house?
Well, traditionally, the first restrictions that were imposed were restrictions that date back to the Statute of Northampton, the common law crime of affray. That is, you could not carry an arm in a manner that would bring terror to the people. The peaceable wearing of arms was considered to be acceptable. However, if people brandished weapons, if they carried them in a threatening manner, then, of course, that was forbidden by the common law and also in this country. Later on in the 19th century, beginning in the early 19th century, we saw some laws that started restricting the concealed carrying of arms. And Heller discussed many, many cases that dealt with those laws, and all of which came back to the same basic rule, which is that so long as the state does not completely extinguish the right, but it's merely regulating a manner of carrying, it can do so. What's interesting is that in today's society...
Okay, so what do you think of some of the other state laws? So in Indiana law, you can carry a gun that's outside your house, provided that the superintendent of police or whatever it is... if it appears to the superintendent of police that the applicant has a proper reason for carrying a handgun and is of good character and reputation and is a proper person to be licensed.
Okay.
Is that okay?
The way that's been interpreted by Indiana's courts, it's okay. We have cited the cases where there was a case that arose actually a number of years ago where a licensing official took it upon himself to believe that this provision enabled him to exercise discretion in issuing him a license, and the court there rejected that proposition. The only way that you can disarm a person, deny them a license, is if they either fail some objective qualification, which is itself constitutional, for example, a background check, or in many states, if the licensing authority can come forward with evidence that show that the person...
The Indiana courts... invalidated this provision?
They didn't invalidate it, but they gave it a very restrictive interpretation. The case is Schubert versus DeBard, which we cite on page 28, Indiana Court of Appeal, and then later on there was another Indiana case, Kellogg, I believe, a few years later, that both limited greatly that provision. Your Honor, I'm in my rebuttal time.
Well, Lynn, I have a couple questions, too. You agree that a state could ban guns in some public places like schools and government buildings, right?
Those are presumptively constitutional.
Yeah, and if a teacher was being stalked and wanted to bring her gun to school to protect herself, could she do that?
I believe the teacher could, so long as the teacher were licensed by the... If the teacher is in a state where... the carrying of guns are licensed to responsible adults, and the teacher has a serious
yeah, but reason what if it, what if it's a state where it's banned to have the guns in the schools? And she says she's being stalked. She wants to bring it in. So what do you think would trump?
I think
her right under your theory to carry a gun in a confrontive situation, or the state ban on guns in schools?
The Supreme Court instructs us that that's probably a very fact-dependent case. They use the language that it's presumptively constitutional, and I think we would have to look to see, for example, is this a school where metal detectors are posted? What security measures are given to the teacher in that environment? This is not that type of case. I agree that there might be circumstances where the teacher may be forbidden, and there may be circumstances where the teacher might not be forbidden. But
well, what about banning guns in liquor stores and bars on the ground that guns and alcohol are not a good mix?
Well,
because you still haven't given us any limits on regulations here in Illinois in terms of carrying guns in public places. So I'm trying to probe to figure out, you know, so would that be constitutional to ban guns in liquor stores and bars?
Well, if the liquor store is merely selling alcohol and it's not for consumption on the premises, I suppose that there would be no reason to prevent liquor stores are often held up. People are hurt in liquor stores, and they might want to defend themselves there. But what's interesting to me in this argument is that
What about the bars?
There are different approaches that the states have. Virtually all the states prohibit people from consuming alcohol while they're carrying under a license.
That's a different issue. The question is, can guns be barred in bars?
People are drinking. Guns and alcohol don't mix.
Guns and alcohol do not mix. That is true. But I think that would again be...
You're not willing to make this concession. Right?
Well, because it's factually dependent upon... You know, what's a bar, for example?
It's factually dependent. Look, doesn't the state has to, or a city, municipality, they have to have a law that people can follow. They can't just say fact-specific, right?
So
your view, I take it, is that they can't have a city, Chicago, couldn't have an ordinance which said that people can't bring guns into bars.
They might. I don't know. We have to look at the facts and to see how they interpret the word bars.
Facts. Well, what facts are we looking for?
Well, for example, Your Honor.
The crime rate in bars or what?
Well,
then we're getting into balancing, right? Which you say we can't do. We have to go back to the 18th century.
But that actually makes our point. At that level, we're engaging in a regulation. We recognize that there's a right to carry a gun, and we're imposing a time, place, and manner regulation upon that right. And then we can perhaps weigh the regulatory interest against the individual interest under some form of means ends analysis. But this is a very different type of case
here. Do you think there's a constitutional right to carry a gun in a bar?
I think that is a question that deserves
full... No, you think there is.
It depends on the circumstances.
But see, there are no real... I mean, that is the circumstance. You're saying they come to the bar. People are drinking at the bar. We can all agree that's what happens at bars. That's why people go. So, I don't understand what other factors. Are you saying if it's an upscale bar that, you know, you have a lot of professionals go into, then maybe it's okay because it's not likely when they get drunk they'll fire up? Or is it a bar that's going to be in some neighborhood where there's a higher incidence of crime? I mean, there's no way the city can regulate based on the particular facts like you're suggesting. I mean, I'm just trying to get out. Do you think that can be, that's constitutional, that the city could do that, ban guns in bars?
I believe that it would depend upon the circumstances of the bar. We define bars in different ways in this country. One of the challenges that we have in this area of law, for example, is that some states have tried to ban alcohol in anywhere where liquor is sold, period. So even if you don't have a traditional bar, it's perhaps a restaurant that has...
That's the liquor store versus the bar. Okay, we're not getting there. Mm-hmm. So thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Garr. And Mr. Cooper?
Good morning, and may it please the court, Charles Cooper for the appellants in the Shepherd case. I take it from the questioning that has gone before me that I need not spend my time trying to demonstrate that the Second Amendment is not confined. It was not enshrined with the scope when the people adopted it, with the scope that limited it to the home.
Well, Blackstone said the offense of riding or going armed with dangerous, unusual weapons is a crime against the public peace. And that certainly gives us some evidence of a distinction between guns in public and guns in the home.
Well, Your Honor, Blackstone and many of the commentators at the time were referring, I would submit to you, to carrying guns in a manner that is apt to terrify the people. Not carrying
what
guns in a way...
What does that mean exactly? Pointing it at people? Or?
In a manner that is not peaceful, is not otherwise non-threatening.
Did they give examples?
I beg your pardon?
Did they give examples?
I think the example was the common law crime essentially of an affray. That is... individuals who are oftentimes riding in cadres, armed and in a threatening way, a way that would give ordinary people reason to believe that they had criminal intentions or non-peaceful intentions. And I believe, Your Honor...
Did people own pistols in those days?
Did they own pistols?
Did many people. My impression, it's only an impression, is that pistols were mainly for dueling and for rich people, that the ordinary people didn't have muskets in America. Americans would have muskets, but that pistols weren't that common. People didn't walk around carrying pistols.
I think that's probably right, Your Honor. We know from Heller, however, that pistols and handguns are the most commonly used weapon for self-defense, and so there's no doubt under Heller that
they are now. But I'm not sure that was true in those days.
But I would like, I guess, to move on and to address the concern that you have raised, Judge Williams, about and you, Judge Posner, about the possibility that that a ruling that the Second Amendment protects the right to keep and bear arms for the purpose of self-defense in public, not necessarily restricted to the home, would open the door to carriage in bars and sensitive places such as that, or possibly sensitive places. I think the answer lies not in what perhaps is the definition of a bar, but the answer lies, I believe, in the text and the history and the tradition of the right itself, of the amendment itself. And it's not an easy inquiry, but I would commend to you Judge Kavanaugh's opinion in the Heller 2 case, the D.C. Circuit case, and we think that's worthy of your careful consideration in terms of trying to apply carefully the teaching of Heller, and then in McDonald, where the court did seem to certainly suggest that if the restriction at issue can be found to have resided in the history of the right itself, and if it is true that there is a long standing wasn't defined, and certainly Judge Posner, some of the long standing restrictions cited in Heller came after the 18th century. But if the restriction is of long-standing nature and has become part of the tradition of the Second Amendment, then it can be employed. But that's where the legislature will have to begin to look as it attempts to refine its regulation, which we don't deny it has the power to do, but it attempts to refine its regulation.
You're saying the Second Amendment can be interpreted on the basis of practices in the 19th century?
Well, Your Honor, and in fact, I think the Heller court...
Yeah, time running backward? I don't understand.
The Heller court did pretty clearly seem to say that the 19th century restrictions on concealing a weapon would fall within the longstanding...
It had been anticipated in the 18th century?
I believe that it may well have been, and probably was anticipated in the 18th century, because I think in the 19th century they were concerned that concealed weapons were a threatening and otherwise inappropriate way to bear arms.
Were there concealed weapons in the 18th century?
To the extent that they had concealable weapons, in the Your Honor.
I don't know. These pistols were pretty large.
I think they could have been concealed in top coats.
Were there concerns about concealed weapons in the 18th century? Was that the problem, concealment?
Your Honor, I cannot tell you that I know the history of concerns about concealed weapons well enough to provide you with an answer that I'm confident in on that score.
Now, do you think a state has more power to prevent carrying concealed weapons in public or weapons that are not concealed in public?
Your Honor, I think...
The same. Does it make any difference?
I think that a state would be free to make that decision so long as it didn't exclude and deny, as the state of Illinois has.
Why would they base such a distinction on? I don't know which you would consider their arguments, both sides. They conceal what is sinister and so on, and you don't know who you're dealing with. If a person has is wearing a holster and the gun is visible, at least you know what you're dealing with, right?
Well, and
I feel safer people who expose their weapons than people in a state where it's lawful to have a concealed weapon.
One can see very rational strong arguments on both sides.
Does the Second Amendment permit a state to make a choice between that? So would it be constitutional if Illinois said, yeah, you can carry a weapon outside the home, but it has to be visible to other people?
And many states in the 19th century, in the mid-1800s, made exactly that choice. And Your Honor, I think Heller basically says that was an appropriate choice for them to make in terms of regulating the manner of carriage in public. And it's up to a state's judgment, reflecting the values of their constituencies, in terms of what will create the least upset. I would suggest, and I think they would be free to do it.
But what they're not, are you suggesting that they're a territorial interpretation on concealed carry, so that an Illinois legislature would have a different constitutional parameters to work with as opposed to the state of Arizona?
No, Your Honor, I don't think so. But I think that Illinois would be a free, absent some historical evidence that I'm not aware of, but that I would hope that the legislature and a court looking at those regulations to determine if they're consistent with the scope of the Second Amendment would pay careful attention to. But in the absence of that kind of evidence, I would simply say to you that I believe Illinois and Arizona could come to different conclusions on that, so long as they didn't come to the conclusion that would violate the Second Amendment, which is that there is no right to bear a firearm for purpose of self-defense in either of those states, open or concealed. And I'm well past my rebuttal time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cooper. Mr. Treble?
Good morning, Your Honors. Counsel, and may it please the Court. I'm Assistant Attorney General Carl Treble, representing the defendants. First, the challenge statutes fall outside of the historic scope of the Second Amendment. Second, according to this Court's instructions in Hazell, even if it did fall within the scope of the amendment, the Court would have to conduct a two-part analysis. First, where does...
But Illinois doesn't seem to have any provision for people who have, you know, a really good reason, even though they're not security officers or anything, or police, but they have a really good reason for carrying a gun outside their house. You know, maybe they've been threatened, or they're in some terrible neighborhood, or an uncle of mine many, many years ago, in New York, he had a clothing manufacturing company, and it had a plant in a very rough neighborhood, I think in Brooklyn, and he was afraid to go there without a gun, so he had a gun. It was illegal, but he was never caught. Actually, later killed himself with a gun. Not a great idea. But why wouldn't, in the Heller era, why wouldn't the state have to make some provision, as these other state laws do, for someone who has it's a responsible person and he's got a good reason for carrying a gun and not a danger to anybody, so, except maybe himself. So,
Your Honor, Illinois does not have to enact such a discretionary law for two reasons. Number one, because there's no historic basis for that requirement. And number two, even if this court disagreed and felt that the Second Amendment scope covered the challenged statutes, then under means interest balancing, where the harm and the risks of harm imposed on the public are so severe.
What are they? I don't understand. This Illinois seems to be the only state that has such a strict ban on carrying guns in public. Now, I can imagine this being an argument that there's something special about Illinois, particularly dangerous people. Of course, it's not true. Actually, the crime rate is much lower in all the North than it is in the South. And so what's the reason? Even if it didn't have all this historical detritus, there'd be an argument. This is quite arbitrary to differentiate so strictly between the home and the street.
Your Honor,
I don't see. Now, maybe there's been a study which shows that this is really important for the safety of people in Illinois, but there isn't any such study.
Well, this court has recognized in Skoyan, in its en banc opinion, that guns are 5 times more deadly than knives. There's an empirical risk when you take a loaded, ready-to-use firearm.
Now, of course that's true, but the question is, but of course there is an argument that the more people are armed, the less criminal activity there is, because the criminals are afraid. So there's a study, for example, which shows there are more hot burglaries, that is, burglaries where of a residence where there are people in the residence when the burglary occurs. There are more hot burglaries in England, which has very strict gun limitations, than in the United States. In the United States, burglars are afraid of being confronted by an armed homeowner. So they try to be very careful to burglarize houses, offices, and so on when no one is there. And that makes for greater safety, right? That's the argument, one of many arguments, that allowing broader gun ownership and possession and carriage can make a society safer. Well, is there anything, you know, empirical that would support Illinois, say, 1 out of 50 states? Is there anything that supports that? Except
yes.
Saying guns are 5 times more dangerous than knives, that doesn't go anywhere to answer that question.
The answer is yes, Your Honor. Both logic and data support the state's position on the challenged statutes because...
What are the data?
The data we cite to in our brief, Your Honor, demonstrate the fire. Again, the interest we're trying to prove here...
No. What are the data which show that Illinois has a lower death rate as a result of its very strict law?
We don't have any...
No, of course not.
No, correct, Your Honor. Right.
And no empirical basis for the law.
And it would be much easier to construct the laws as a policy matter if we had data demonstrating that a specific law would be 100% effective. And I grant you...
100%. Don't be silly. Look.
Well, Your Honor, the point is that the legislatures are the ones making the difficult policy decisions that you've discussed.
But if they're dealing with sensitive constitutional rights, they may be required to have evidence rather than just, you know, intuition.
Well, 2 points, Your Honor. First, again, historically, there is no right to carry a firearm in a public place based on the understanding of the Second Amendment as understood by the framers.
What is it mean to bear arms? If there's no right to carry arms in a public place, you don't bear arms in your house. You don't march around with a gun over your shoulder, right?
Well, Your Honor, that was one of the disagreements in the Heller case in the Supreme Court.
I mean, the significance of bear arms is that it really supports the rejected interpretation, which ties this right to the militia. That's what they mean by bear arms. You don't talk about an individual bearing arms. But given Heller, don't you have to give a meaning to bear arms in a constitutional provision which has been interpreted to include rights of self-defense, right? And it says it's not just to keep arms, it's to bear arms. So you can't just keep, it's not just a right to keep it in your house, it's a right to carry it.
Well,
you can't mean carry it in your house, because that's pointless.
Well, Your Honor, obviously Heller disagreed with that point. And historically, Heller says we need to look back at what the framers and ratifiers of the Second Amendment understood the amendment to mean.
But Heller discussed the right to possess and carry weapons in cases of confrontation. So what should we make of that? I mean, doesn't the right to carry weapons in case of confrontation clearly extend beyond the home? I mean, that's getting to the heart of Judge Posner's concern, and that's my concern as well.
And it's understood, Your Honor. The Illinois law does not go so far as to stop at the four corners of the home. It allows for carrying ready-to-use weapons on private land in one's place of business.
It's so strange, the private land. If you live in an apartment, you don't have any land. If you live in a suburb, you have, you know, a tenth of an acre. Live on a farm, you have may have 100 acres. Why tie it to that?
Because when you step outside of those accepted areas, you're in public. And as has been recognized for centuries, when you take a ready-to-use firearm or arms under the statute of Northampton's interpretation into public, it's both terrifying and presents a risk of death or great bodily harm, as this court called it, mayhem.
So then if you have someone that's being stalked, and let's say they've gotten a protective order, but... Right. And, of course, we know law enforcement can't cover somebody 24-7. Let's say it's a victim of domestic violence. And she wants to carry a gun, and she has to go to work every day. So she can have the gun in the house and in her yard, but then when she goes to work, she has no gun. She's not covered. Under the Illinois law, she couldn't have that. She couldn't take that firearm to work with her.
She would have to unload that firearm while it's
exactly.
in transportation
exactly.
to her workplace.
When the stalker is like, right. where the chances are the stalker attacking her, and of course the stalker would know too if she had a gun and she had to take the bullets out. So it would be an ideal time to get her. You know, between when she left the house and when she got to her job. I mean, that's where the rubber really meets the road. So this is somebody, not just a general person who says, I just love having my gun with me because I love guns. This is somebody who's being stalked. So under the Illinois law, there's no provision for that.
Correct,
there's
Your Honor.
There's no exception for that.
Correct, Your Honor. And again, it's a difficult policy choice that the legislature has made, and perhaps that argument is why...
Yeah, it sounds pretty easy, and other states do make an exception mm-hmm. for people who have a protective order.
The NRA, as they trumpet on their website, has convinced 31 states since 1987 to adopt a right to carry laws. It demonstrates...
Wait a second, that's different. Everyone is allowed to persuade. So, but what about... other states do have a protective order exception. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't that be an example, following Judge Williams said, a kind of minimum... recognition of the arbitrariness of saying yes, you have a constitutional right to have a gun in your home, but that's it, or on your property, but that's it. You can just
because, Your Honor, the popularity of regulations in other states does not define the scope of the constitutional right, nor does it...
No, I wasn't getting the popularity. I'm talking about a real exception where there's real evidence presented. That's why I'm saying it's not just, I just love having my gun with me everywhere I go. There's a legitimate showing that's been made where somebody would fill out an affidavit, they'd have to be of good character, it'd have to be a legal weapon, all those kinds of things. That's what I'm... speaking of.
And there's no constitutional support for the notion that Illinois must make that exception. Again, it's a difficult policy choice, but there's no constitutional requirement that they make that choice.
Now, once you accept the proposition, as we're required to do whatever we think secretly, that there was a constitutional right of self-defense with armed self-defense in the 18th century. It's in the Constitution. It becomes kind of absurd to think that those 18th century people would have said, well, you can just have your gun in your home. I mean, these are people living on the frontier, you know, they're worried about Indians and so on. Obviously, if there was a right to self-defense, if the Second Amendment guaranteed this right, everyone would understand that it wasn't limited to just having a, musket in your home.
That's not the governing authority by Heller, Your Honor. The governing authority by Heller is that we have to look to what their understanding was. And when
I'm telling you, just the common sense of it. You're living in Ohio in 1787. And you're, you know, and this is on the frontier, right? There are Indians and so on. And you go hunting and, or you go shopping or something, you go to the nearest town, you'd be terrified to go without carrying a gun.
Your Honor, I don't know about 1790s Wyoming.
Not Wyoming. It wasn't part of the United States.
Right, exactly, Your Honor. But to look to the Northwestern...
Exist.
To look to the territorial...
France.
Correct, Your Honor. To look to the territorial rules as an example, Tombstone or Dodge City required that when the cowboys...
No, they weren't part of the United States.
Okay, and I think that's getting...
Mexico.
And I think that's getting at your answer, Your Honor, is that...
Suppose I'm living on a farm in the 18th century in Ohio, and there are Indians, some of whom are hostile, and I spend most of my time on my farm, but on the other hand, I have to go into town, buy supplies, and so on. There's no police force or anything. Of course, I would feel maybe I'd carry the gun, you know, in a sling on my horse. I might not be carrying it on my shoulder, but nevertheless, I would feel that was part of my, you know, personal security measures that were essential in the absence of a police force and a general pacification of the area. So, why doesn't just a little bit of historical imagination say that this right couldn't have been limited to the home?
Your Honor, the historical record demonstrates that the Founding Fathers understood there was a fundamental difference when you took
So you just don't accept my example. You say Ohio could say, "Oh, sorry, you're going to have to take your chances when you go and get supplies, or you'll have to be just totally self-sufficient and never buy anything."
I'm not trying to fight the hypothetical, Your Honor. My point is that their understanding of the public square in those times was much different than our public square today. In other words, what they might have viewed as an area of concern being the marketplace and the public square in the towns, because there were people present, has now expanded because of modern society.
Well, does Heller allow that comparison?
I'm sorry, Your
Honor. Doesn't Heller take us to the square that you want us to leave?
I think Heller allows that comparison, Your Honor, because, again, Heller tells us to look to the historical sources. The historical sources, like Lord Cook, like Blackstone, demonstrate...
So Illinois could possibly ban... have a statute which complete ban in Chicago, but in Peoria that square might be okay?
If they wanted to do that, they could, Your Honor, but there's no constitutional requirement that they do so.
And let me ask you this. The Supreme Court said that laws forbidding the carrying of firearms in sensitive places such as schools or government buildings were probably fine, but those are very specific places. So why doesn't that language suggest that Illinois' broad ban on carrying guns in public goes too far?
Because, Your Honor, as the court in Heller explained, as this court explained in the en banc opinion in Squayen, we don't read Heller as if it's a codification of a Second Amendment statute and as if it's filling the field. It was deciding one issue with one regulation and, of course, providing important guidance on how the framework of the court's analysis in lower courts should go for challenges to future regulations. So we know from Heller that we have to look first to the scope historically. And then second, if it is within the scope, according to Azell, this panel has to decide whether or not it falls within that core fundamental right identified in Heller as being at its peak in the home. And if it falls in that core...
My example shows that people on the frontier in the 18th century would have been in extreme danger if they hadn't been allowed to carry guns. Outside the home.
And again, Your Honor, I think the view historically was that when you took guns into a populated area, you were not allowed to carry them in a loaded...
Populated areas are separate. Not all of Illinois is a populated area.
Your Honor, the areas that are covered by this statute are populated.
I thought these laws were generally left to local ordinances rather than statewide. I mean, one of the criticisms of Heller is imposing a national standard on a culturally and a very diverse country, and also with very different crime rates and different levels of urbanization and slums and so on. I don't know why Illinois thinks that this flat ban is appropriate for the entire state. Maybe it is for Chicago.
And, Your Honor, that's a policy question that the General Assembly in Illinois has been dealing with.
The problem is, when you're dealing in this, you know, constitutional realm, you can't just say, well, it's maybe arbitrary and absurd, but it's a matter of policy. It's also a matter of constitutional law.
And the law here is definitely not absurd, Your Honor. There's a compelling government interest.
No, it's not clear that there's a compelling government interest in every place in Illinois.
And again, Your Honor, this statute does not cover every place in Illinois.
Yes, it does.
No, Your Honor, it does not cover private land. It does not cover
dwellings. No. But the point is, it doesn't leave out some area where the conditions may be very different from what they are in Chicago.
There's certainly going to be some overbreadth to the application.
Overbreadth, you know, in constitutional law, that's a bad word.
But it's not under intermediate scrutiny, Your Honor. It's allowable under... It's allowable under intermediate scrutiny because the state does not have to demonstrate a perfect fit in tailoring its laws.
It never has to demonstrate a perfect fit with anything.
No, Your Honor.
No such thing as perfect fits in law. Right?
It doesn't have to meet the strict scrutiny standard.
That's just rhetoric.
Mr. Trello, why don't we try it this way? What do you see in the language in Heller, in the majority, which, of course, we're mandated to follow, that gives you the most room to justify the ban that exists in this state?
Two portions of that opinion, Your Honor. First, the one requiring the courts to look to the framers' understandings when they ratified.
I think we've kind of covered that area.
Yes. And second
I find
of all,
it a
Your Honor,
murky, but let's... Okay, what's the next?
Even Heller's language recognizes that the core right it was identifying is at its apex. It's at its highest point when you're talking about self-defense in the home. I see that my time is up, Your Honor. Can I finish?
Oh, no, that's not going to stop you.
Okay.
Finish answering.
It's at its apex when it's in the home, Your Honor. So if this court applies the Ezell sliding scale.
Well, at the apex in the home, you live in a high-rise in Chicago. I suspect that the apex of self-defense is outside that high-rise. As to the question of policy choices, if even post-Heller you can have such a policy choice. I mean, that doesn't make any sense, does it?
I guess it comes down to the fundamental understanding, Your Honor, that once you impose what you're claiming is a self-defense right outside the home and upon everyone else in public, you're not just exercising your own rights. You're chilling the rights of the public who now...
Post-Heller, can we have that discussion?
Yes, Your Honor, because as this court instructed in Ezell, even if it falls within the core, which this court described in Ezell as applying to the shooting range ban, even if it falls within that, it's almost strict scrutiny that applies. What our argument is that this is outside of those, far removed from those cores. Even if it is within the scope, it's far removed from the core, and therefore the court should apply at most an intermediate scrutiny analysis.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Treble.
Thank you, Your Honor.
So, Mr. Gurr, Mr. Cooper, do you have anything further? Do you have any time? Do you have any time? I don't have any time, but if you have something really important to say.
Only if the court asks questions, Your Honor.
No, we don't have any. No. Okay, thank you very much to all the counsel. Move on to our next case.